The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Well, a good morning, a happy Advent to you all, an early Christmas blessing, a post-Hanukkah blessing, and a happy having your mother in the studio day for today, this day. My mother is in the studio. And this woman doesn't pull any punches, so it's going to be a good show today.
We are excited.
We are excited. You know, the rabbi and I were just, you know, having our Thursday lunch that we do to talk about the radio show. And, you know, we're going through all these different topics. And we were, because we had Gary Lesser, the head of the law firm. And but unfortunately, he got sick. So we were sitting there, we were trying to punt and figure out what we're going to do. We were talking about women in the Bible. We were going to go down that road. Women in our both of our traditions, the development, the evolution, finally, in that consciousness. And then I was like, yeah, my mother's coming in tomorrow. And then you were like, wait, what? Oh, my gosh. She's got to be on the show.
Yep.
She's going to be on the show. And so here it is. So when we come back from the segment, my mom will be in the studio. And we're going to be talking about really what's it like. Last week was really from a spousal standpoint. What's it like to be married to a cleric? You know, your wife has been here. Now my wife was in last week. What's it like to be married to this person who a little bit has a job that can just, if you allow it, take all of you? Mm-hmm. There could be a lot of emotional heaviness. There can be huge highs and lows. You can get beat up and you want to bring it home. You want to talk about it. But then you don't want to talk about it because you don't want to just drown your spouse in it. And you just want to have good spouse time. So we talked about all that last week. So if you missed that, please go on to the WSTU YouTube page where they list all the shows. They're also on the St. Mary's website, St. Mary's Stewart. So stmarys-stewart.org, go to the radio tab. But we'll be talking about today call. What's it like to be called? And getting some insight from my own mother about what was it like to really see her own son from kindergarten on, and did she see this coming, you know? And then reflect, Rabbi, on you as well about your parents. Did they see this coming of you being a not only just an attendee, a congregant, but a leader, a leader of a rabbi? So before we do that, we always we like to start off our show sometimes with, is it awkward? And today's Is It Awkward, I think we have a good one from you. You've had two of them in a row. And was it this morning that you had?
So I tend to get it almost every morning. I am a passionate coffee drinker. I do not buy Starbucks. And again, it's nothing against the company itself. I just find that coffee very bitter. But I do enjoy Dunkin' Donuts. And every morning as I drive into I drop my two kids off at elementary school. I bring my other one down to the temple. And for the last few days, as we know, you know, after Thanksgiving, it is really the heavy sell, the hard push for Christmas. And I as I roll down the window to pay for, you know, a iced coffee and a few munchkins for my little munchkin, the gentleman who is the worker at Dunkin' Donuts will roll down the window and say, oh, you know, are you excited for Christmas? And you know, I try as best I can, because I think that it is an educative moment to be able to, you know, kind of say, you know, I'm not Christian, I'm Jewish, and you know, we already had our holiday, we'll have others in throughout the rest of the course of the year. And he looked at my 2-year-old and said, have you been naughty or nice? And are you excited to see Santa? And my 2-year-old kind of gave this look and said, no. Okay. I said, okay, you know, let's be nice. And she said, well, I'm Jewish. And seeing the guy's response, which was, I think, a little bit of mortification of, oh, I've kind of stepped in it, to be able to say, oh, you know, the response was really not given. Because I think he didn't really know how to respond. And it's been a series of weeks of going over this. My favorite was a couple of years ago, we, on Christmas, had gone to the New York-style deli, known aptly here in South Florida as 2J's. Mm-hmm. And one of the servers had come up to the family and said, oh, you know, Merry Christmas, and we hope that you, you know, have a great day, and, you know, what's your Christmas been like? And at that time, my now 7.5-year-old had kind of looked and said, well, we don't celebrate it. I said, okay, you don't need to be rude. And she said, I'm not being rude, Dad. Isn't it the other way around? Aren't they being rude to me for not recognizing my holiday? And I said, okay, but they don't know. You're not visibly Jewish. And I remember when the gentleman had said, oh, well, I'm really sorry. Happy holidays. And my kid had turned and said, thank you. But remember, I'm Jewish. So I celebrate something different. And I've always wanted my kids to have this understanding of a strong Jewish identity, for them to know who they are and what they are, and to be comfortable in their own identity, but at the same time, to be respectful of other traditions. So it's always been, and as Jews, I think we have a very difficult and challenging time around Christmas, because we, you know, we tend to lead up to our, around this season, our Hanukkah time, where we really promote it, we talk about it, we're excited about it, but we don't really get that you know, 6-week opportunity for Christmas to really revel in it. And the other day, my daughter had said to me, you know, Dad, I'm really proud to be Jewish, but we get it better than those Christians. So I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, Dad, for Christians, they only get one day. They get one day of Christmas. We get 8 days of Hanukkah. How amazing is that? Why don't they come to our side? They get 8 days. And then my other daughter, my middle child, kind of said, well, but don't they get 12 days of Christmas?
Oh, boom.
So we kind of went backwards and forwards on that. And my older daughter said, yes, Maya, don't worry. They, you know, although it's the 12 days of Christmas, remember that they traditionally only get like one present under their tree. We get a present every single night. How wonderful it is to embrace that. And I just thought, you know, it's a healthy conversation to have that, especially at such a young age, for our kids to understand, you know, religious sensitivity, religious understanding, and that type of stuff.
Yeah, it's we've talked about this before, especially where we live right now. I mean, it is a pretty homogenous area, especially when you come down to faith and come down to religion, even though that Martin County ranks in the top 10 for the most unchurched. But then again, that stat is not including all religions. Mm. That's a Christian stat of saying the most unchurched areas in the country. But still, it is, I mean, we live in a very homogenous area, which is, you know, mostly white and mostly Christian. And so it, I applaud your daughter who's got the chutzpah, who's got the strength to just speak up and say something, because sometimes you got to say things. And I know my wife, as there's many times, you know, she's an African woman, and there's just things that are said that you have this choice. That, do you want to push back? Do you want to say something? Do you kind of want to make a scene? Do you want to be labeled that person? And often or not, you know, my wife's got pretty thick skin where she'll just be like, you know, she'll just shake her head and just move on. But I think there comes a point where, you know, you do have to speak up, not because you need to fight back. It's not that. It's just raising social consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's just raising this cultural IQ that we desperately need, that sometimes just comes a lot more organically when you grow up in a place like where my wife grew up, in New Jersey, where you see everything. You have Muslims and Hindus and Jews and Christians, and everyone's just everywhere, and everyone just kind of just does life together. including public transportation, where you just crammed in together and it works. I think, and to me, that's God's kingdom, and the importance of raising that social IQ, raising that cultural IQ, that cultural incompetence. Why diversity is so important? Not because, yay, diversity, we just want to celebrate everyone. It's the truth of God's kingdom, and it allows us to explore all the different multiple layers of who we are as God's children. So there's we could probably go on and on with other is it awkward moments that your family's experienced. I know I've been visible to what my wife has experienced here from time to time, but I'll allow her to come on air to speak about those. And I think around these times of the holidays, it gets a little more, it gets brought out more. And some people, you hear the comments of like, I don't want to say happy holidays. Why don't I say happy holidays? I believe in Jesus. I'm going to say Merry Christmas. Yeah, you can. Jesus had a tremendous amount of acceptance and welcoming of people from beyond the Jewish tradition, and used people in parables of folks who were from outside the Jewish tradition to teach us of the way of the walk. So for us to kind of shove down this our holiday upon others, or not assume that everyone's on board, I don't know. It's just cultural competency, not to assume, because then you get a little girl who's like, "Well, you don't care about me. You know, you're just assuming." So, So that's our is it awkward statement. So before we go to commercial, there's always we want to do a little catch up here. We've always had these challenges, the rabbi and I, of how we could bring pop culture into our sermons, into our teachings. And you nailed it, my friend, because you got called to bring in 90210. And then I've been left over yet to still bring in the theology of Alyssa Milano into my sermon.
Well, we got to remove the whole notion that, you know, it's not the aim of the show of this program is. Although a priest and a rabbi walk into a radio show, it seems like it's morphed into, you know, the Alyssa Milano show. And if she is listening, you know, give us a call. Give us a call.
Yeah,
I'd love to hear your insight.
We'd love to. You were the first woman I fell in love with as a kid. Yeah. So Alyssa, it's 772-220-9788 because I know you're listening. But what I did, so let me tell you. This last week was Advent 3, instead of going down, it was John the Baptist, a good Jewish, a prophetic voice coming out of the wilderness and turning to the mercenaries, the soldiers, to the to those who were probably in a poor or middle class, and to the tax collectors. And the first thing he says to them as they come down to get baptized is, "You brood of vipers!" And he just starts telling them about like how you need to live your life. And he goes, "I don't care what your past was. I don't care if you're children of Abraham. God can raise up children from these stones. What I care about is the fruit that you're bearing in your life right now." So at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. when I'm going over my sermon before I go in, because we have a 9 a.m. service, and then you get up early, you know, you probably do the same thing, and you kind of just go over your thoughts again. For some reason, the prophetic voice of NSYNC came into my head. Because it's like God saying, "I don't care who you are, where you've been, what you've done, as long as you love me." And I thought this was going to be I'm going to drop this during the service. I'm going to get out there. And all these people, this contemporary service who are, you know, we have intergenerational stuff. So one service usually has an older demographic. This one has got everything from Gen X. And I thought all the Gen X parents would just totally get it. And so I said, "So guys, I want you to know. What John the Baptist is really, really saying here is, I don't care who you are, where you've been, what you've done," expecting people to start chiming in here, just crickets, "as long as you love me."
Did the community break into song?
No, I got left high and dry.
Did a flash mob and...
No, that was my hope, and finally got some people shaking their head, and I was like, "You guys don't remember the song? It's this great boy band, NSYNC, and John the Baptist is aligns with it." And then you know what's funny is that afterwards, actually, everyone got it. They were too embarrassed to raise their hand and say that they are aware, because a lot of it was men who were aware of this boy band of NSYNC. And they told me later, like, yeah, that was NSYNC. Yeah, yeah, that was funny. I was like, why didn't you raise your hand? I mean, it was crickets, man. It was just, yeah. So
maybe next time you throw in the reference to Vanilla Ice.
Milli Vanilli?
Yeah, throw in a little of that.
Yeah, or I just throw a video up on the screen, maybe. I'll just bring them all back.
Yeah. You know?
So, anyhow, all right, so when we come back, my mother will be in the studio, we'll be talking, of course, about The Call and really opening it up in the third part of the segment about what does The Call mean to you? A call is not just for priests and rabbis, but God has a call for all of us. We've all been called. He's given us all at least one major gift. Miggity Mike, our producer, has a great gift of being a producer. That's this call right now as he knows it. Calls can change, too. So think about that. And again, that phone number is 772-220-9788, 772-220-9788. And when you come back, get ready, because Mama Christian is going to come in and start tearing up the studio and throwing stuff around. She don't play. We'll see you in a sec.
Welcome back to A Priest and a Rabbi. As we come back here to our program, and as Father Anderson had mentioned, and as we explore through the show, that last week we had your beautiful and fantastic wife talk about what it was like, what it is like to be married to a man of the cloth, and looking at it from the perspective of a spousal relationship to now, today, having the extreme and pleasurable honor of having your mother here, from spouse to the source, to finding out what it was really like raising a rather tall child into the priesthood. So it gives me great pleasure to have here Father Anderson's mother, Lila, to join us in the radio program.
Hi, everyone.
And one thing to note that here, Mom, that you kind of fit perfectly the brand of the show just by your name. Because your name is, from what I understand, is, I don't know if it's one of the few words, but just at least one of the words that has both meaning in both Hebrew and Arabic.
Correct. Right? That's correct.
And it means
night.
Night. Night. And sometimes I've heard it means beautiful night.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid, Lila was this very unique name that my mother had. And then now, Lila is like the hot name on the block.
There's been a resurgence, yes.
Lila, Layla, you know. So look what you did. Look what you've done.
Okay. Trendsetter.
So, Bob, we wanted to, it was, as you know, as the rabbis really pushed for you, the rabbi really pushed for you to be here. And you we little pushing and pulling. We got you while we were WhatsApping last night, while you were sitting on that while you're on the plane, wondering if you're going to get out with the weather. And it was God's will for you to be here, and to talk about this idea of witnessing and understanding. And what was your take on this whole thing of like, what, my son wanting to become a priest? So, so Rabbi, I know you had. I've heard it's part of your story here, but I know you had some questions burning on your heart about this.
So, I mean, I always find it interesting, especially with clergy members, to really go back to the early beginnings, from birth to, growing up, So, Ms. Anderson, what was it like, raising a son while at the same time, projecting into the future your son would become the preeminent priest here in Stuart, Florida. Did you recognize at an early age that you felt that this was the path to which your son would take, or did it come out of thin air? Was it something that, what was that like for you?
Actually, yes, I always knew that Christian would eventually, sooner or later, end up being a priest. Because from a very young age, he was amazingly devout. He when I would walk Christian and his sister to the bus stop, he would walk in front of us. And one day I turned to my daughter and I said, what's he doing? Why does he always go in front of us? And she said, oh, he prays before we get to the bus stop. And he was just a little bitty kid then. He was like 5 or 6 years old. So, yeah, I always knew that that's where he was going to end up one day.
Hmm. Wow.
I never knew that story.
Hmm.
I never knew that story.
True. It's true.
I mean, to me, the only thing I can lean back on was writing a letter to grandma at one point, 10 years old, just thinking, I'm thinking about becoming, you know, maybe one day I'll be a priest. But it wasn't really something, this huge proclamation.
Hmm.
So all from that point forward, it was in the back of your mind that at some point this might happen?
Yeah, because your relationship with God was a very, from what I could see, was a very deep and mature one from a very young age. And it was always a major part of your life. Wow. Always. Like, and I'm not saying that you weren't like a wild one.
We want to get into that wild one.
You were wild and crazy, but still, it was still there was that centrality of faith and devotion.
Wow.
Yeah. You never stopped going to church. In fact, he used to drive me crazy about church because there were Sundays I'd get up. I didn't feel like going to church. Mm-hmm. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there's Christian saying, you know, we can go to the Catholic church. There's a 5 p.m. service. No, I don't feel like it.
Wow.
And he would go by himself.
Hmm. And for you, in terms of what you brought to the family, in terms of your vision, your ideals, the strong values and ethics, in terms of participating in church activities and making the church a focal point of your life, that has always been very strong with you?
Yes, it was. We, both my husband and I, were very active in the church when the kids were little, and we felt that that was a good environment for them to be in. Wow. So, yeah, Sundays we spent a large part of the day at church. We were there probably once or twice a week otherwise, because we're either involved in church governance or, you know, just service. Christian's dad was a very active member of the choir. So we spent a lot of time there, and both Christian and his sister loved it.
Wow.
I think that was key, is that we actually enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. We enjoyed the whole experience of it. We might not have known exactly what was going on, but we enjoyed the liturgy. We enjoyed all the colors and the smells and the bells, and we were acolytes. And I think that made a real big impact.
Also, it was a small enough church. It was like 70 families.
Okay.
So that people got really close. Mm-hmm. And it was a good vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. But during that, now, how did that way where, you know, because I know, Rabbi, you're going to ask this question. Mm-hmm. How did that way with all the wildness that you saw going on? And were you just like, well, maybe he's not going to be a priest because he's kind of a little wild?
No, I never thought that, because kids were kids. I mean.
Yeah. And so was there because at home, would we be having deep conversations and talking about God a lot at home?
Usually initiated by you, Christian. Yes.
Like inquisitiveness?
Yes, inquisitiveness.
And then asking you and Dad about it.
Yes.
Yeah. So a little background. My mother was raised in the Catholic Church. My dad was raised in the Lutheran Church and in the Church of the Arts. Because that was really their big institution that my dad's family came. And then so they decided upon the Episcopal faith that happens, because that met in the middle, really as a way of meeting in the middle. And so that's where the Episcopal part comes in, because it just combines the beautiful liturgy and takes the liturgy of the Catholic Church. It takes more of a progressive approach to the theology. And it's kind of not as far Protestant as the Lutheran Church is, but has many of those Protestant from the great protest that happened from the Protestant Reformation, has some of the theology from there. And even in
which was pretty foreign to me, because as I was telling Christian earlier, I was raised in an Orthodox Jewish neighborhood.
Hmm.
And at Christmas time, it was easy to find our house because it was the only house with lights on it. But I grew up knowing a lot about that faith and feeling very close to it. And it was the Protestants who were the other in my life.
Wow.
Yeah, you always said that you felt closer to
Judaism. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. And technically, the stats are the Catholics have, when you have interfaith marriages, Catholics and Jews have the most amount of success, as opposed to a Protestant marrying a Jew or any other mixture. It's when you do this interfaith Catholics and Jews because of the ritual, because of this commitment to this historical, institution, but that that there's a great reverence that both can hold on to. So Rabbi, you had some other when we were having lunch together about this, you know, and talking about call and what's it like to step into a call. And so you know, if you know, we were talking to the rabbi about yesterday about at a certain point, you know, I was out in I first graduated, went into theater school, right? Got done with conservatory, was working doing regional work around the country, doing Shakespeare stuff. And during that time, was it still in the back of your head? Or were you like, oh no, this is what he's doing now. He's an actor.
Yeah. But like, let's think back. We went to see you at the Shakespeare Festival in Louisville.
Yeah.
And I remember it was the summer you turned 21. So Christian naturally stayed up all night and drank because he was legal.
Like one
guess
or two.
Guess where we were at 10 o'clock the next morning in church at Christian's instigation.
Wow.
I mean, where else would we go? He's dragging us all to church.
It's to get over that night of drinking.
Yeah.
Is to absolve oneself.
Well, I mean, you have like when you have one or two or whatever, you know.
But the point is you were in a different environment with your peers, going full force for the theater, but you still went to church every Sunday. And as I recall, when we walked into that church, everyone knew him. So it wasn't like you were just dropping in. You were engaged with that community.
Wow.
Right. Do you think that you and Dad and Camille had help with that formation or that push? Or do you think sometimes you guys are trying to like put a little breaks and be like, hey, man, can you just relax on this whole religiosity thing and just chill out a little bit? Because there'd be times I remember I was fasting during Holy Week and I'd just be eating bread and you guys would be like, would you just eat? Are you serious? Jesus died and rose from the grave. You're good. You don't have to fast every day. So what I remember sometimes is, yeah, of course you guys were supportive, but times would be like, hey, man, I think you need to kind of like just take it easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, especially during Holy Week.
Especially the fasting. I used to worry because you were still young. You need to eat. And you see how tall he is. Mm-hmm. You got to feed that thing.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think a big thing that happened was when my grandmother passed, who we really was the holy matriarch of the family. So we still look to her that you if you want to just call, pray to grandma, because grandma has a direct line to Jesus. But when she passed, she had all these books, all these religious books, and she had icons and she had stuff. And so my mother gifted them to me. And that really helped also start to like learn about theology and understand about theology and start to read Thomas Merton and some other good Catholic theologians to really, you know, put it together.
But that's a huge jump from working in the entertainment industry to serving the community, right? And I mean, in some semblance, it's semi similar, right? I mean, ultimately, we're in the profession to inspire, to engage. What better way than if of a previous life in the entertainment industry to drum up that excitement? But again, that is a quite a big jump from working from a Shakespeare company to being an Episcopal priest. So when your son had come back and said, you know, Mom, I'm entering into the priesthood. Was it a shock? Was it one of, I now see the ways in which I've raised my son, that these are the important factors, environmental, familial, those things that we've instilled in our son, and this just seems the natural path of where life would take.
Yeah, that was pretty much my reaction. It's like, okay, so you're finally doing it. I knew this day would come.
Wow.
You're that certain, and probably more certain than Dad or Camille.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm kind of flabbergasted. I didn't know that it was so certain for you.
Oh, yeah. And I told other people. I mean, I told friends and stuff over the years. Yeah. I know this is where he's finally going to end up.
Like years ago, like 10 years ago,
yeah.
You told people this.
Yeah.
Even when I was in the entertainment industry.
Yes. And your cousin Pam. I remember she said to me, do you think Christian has the call? This was when you were like 20. And I said, yeah, he's going to wind up there.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Which is amazing that my mother would, you know, not push that upon me. You still allowed me to explore and to develop and follow the call that I had at the time in the entertainment world and doing all the work that was there.
Mm-hmm.
But not saying, Christian, I'm just going to tell you this is where you're going to end up until it became more purposeful, until I was really going through the process. Because the Episcopal Church, you have to go through, you have to jump through so many fiery hoops. It takes like 3 years before you can even get to seminary. And during that time, I think you started to talk about more about your thoughts on it, your thoughts on the walk, you know?
Yeah.
So I got to say that a lot of times my mom and my dad, I lean on a lot. So having a priest in the family, you would think that maybe sometimes they might come to me. But I go to them because they're so bright and they have a good sense of theology, a great sense of theology that I go to them a lot of times for insight, for sermons, for teachings. Because they're both so well-read, and they have strong faith, very strong faith. But my mother always never, and my dad, never thrust it upon us. We go to church, but as in the beliefs and stuff, you guys always allowed us to find our relationship with God on our own. There was Sunday school, and there were things like that you taught, mm-hmm. but there was still never a hitting over the head that you really allowed us, and sometimes to fail on our own, and to discover. And I think that's created a very, very healthy way of developing a relationship with God, because mm-hmm. it wasn't one that was being hit over my head by my parents. They just created the structure and said, here's this place to go, this spiritual gym. And then you start bouncing around the questions and you form your own relationships with it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Remember, a lot of that was a reaction on my part to my Roman Catholic upbringing, where there's a lot of guilt and there's a lot of fear, and I wanted to be very careful not to have that kind of religion be a part of my children's lives.
Hmm.
I wanted it to be mm-hmm. a matter of free will
mm-hmm.
and joyful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite amazing when we think about it too, is that, you know, the impressions and the understanding that we were raised with, that we want to give our children the best opportunity. And I think when some of those challenges present itself, to be able to say, how do I internalize this? What meaning can I make sense of this? And at the end, if it's not purposeful or if it's not meaningful, to find and to search for, you know, that act that says, you know, this is the path to which I'd like to, you know, develop and bring forward for my family.
Well, so for you, Rabbi, I mean, what's it like? Do you, were your parents shocked when you said you're going to go down this road?
My mother was not. My mother's been a Jewish educator for 50 some odd years.
Moms no.
Absolutely. My mother has taught in our I grew up in a very large Reform synagogue, a couple thousand families. The largest Reformed synagogue in Canada, and my mom's been teaching there for donkey's years. So, my mom also taught at still teaches at the Canada's National Museum. So for there, history, archaeology, that type of stuff was always impressionable upon me. So I think for my mom, it wasn't a huge stretch. And I studied anthropology and archaeology in undergrad, and just absolutely loved it, and studied the culture of people, and started looking at my own religion and started looking at Judaism and thought, let's do an anthropology of Judaism and anthropology of religion, and got really into it. And then the push came where I thought to myself, you know, let's check out this whole rabbinic thing. I never wanted the 9-to-5 job. I I wanted to be there to make impactful moments in people's lives and be there at joyous as well as, you know, very challenging occasions. And I spent a long time through college thinking about it. So I did a I did a Hebrew course. And I remember my father saying to me, "What are you going to do with Hebrew?" And I said, "Well, you know, it's a course. I'm studying. I'm improving myself." And my father said, "What are you going to do? You're going to become a rabbi?" And I said, "You know, Dad, funny you should mention that." And my father said, "Are you kidding?" And I said, "No." And my parents have been very supportive, very supportive. Even up to the last, like, vestiges moments before ordination, my father had said very warmly and very supportively, "You know, it's never too late." And I said, "Never too late for I not only through undergrad, but I spent 6 years in rabbinical school." And my father had said, "It's never too late to become a lawyer." And I said, "Well, you know, with all the education and everything else, I think I'm set. You know, ordination does begin in an hour." And my father said, but think about it. We could be lawyers together." And I said, "I think I've chosen the right path for me." But it was one of those things that I think from my parents' perspective, it was a shock, especially for my father. Looking back on earlier my earlier life and growing up as a child who resisted going to religious school, would rather spend the time socially with friends, you know, when it came to the high holidays of sitting through services for countless hours and not really connecting or appreciating the liturgy, spent most of my time in services kind of people watching of who's going around, who's talking, who's not. And then later in life, kind of realizing, you know, that this is actually what Judaism is. It is about community. It is about family. It is about being together and sharing a sacred moment that we can create, you know, meaningful moments. But certainly as a kid, if you were to say to my parents that your son would become a rabbi, I think my parents would have politely laughed in some way, much like Sarah laughs when God says, "I will grant you a child." I think the same response would come from my parents of, but this is a kid who can barely sit through services. Whereas today, the one who does lead services. So it was a very interesting dynamic, I think, now post-rabbinical school, seeing the fruit of my parents' labors, that I think it was environmental on and you know, what they had raised me with. You know, my parents did not push the, you know, dietary laws or the kashrut challenges. My parents had always emphasized the importance of family, where my father would say, "I don't care what you're doing. Family is the most important thing." You know, I have three brothers. My parents, my father would always say, "I don't expect your brothers to be your best friends, but they're your family." And I speak to my brothers all the time, and we have a very, very close relationship. But for my parents, it was always the values and the ethics of being a good and deserving person to help those in need, to support those in our community as well as the wider community. And that, to my parents, was tantamount to anything we did. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of that kind of spilled into, you know, the rabbinate that I have today and still growing from and still learning from. But certainly, I certainly give a lot of honor and certainly a lot of influence to my parents.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and I think there's this common, commonality of this environmental aspect of the house that we're raised in and this freedom that's given to us. There's values that are instilled. There was values that were instilled in my house about family and until soccer took over, was always that family dinner as well. But really the root of good family values, but also just good values of seeing my parents being so generous, being such givers, of being great with charity, of service and of love of neighbor. So those values that are practiced that we lift up as being followers of Jesus, but then not hitting us over the head with it, allowed us to find our own ways with it. And Mom, you were saying a lot of that came back because of response from your background within the Roman Catholic Church, and not to take some swings at our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters, but your experience, though, that it was obedience is just being tame of how maybe the religion was put upon you. I mean, you went to Catholic school, right? And the nuns weren't sitting there giving high fives to you when you walked into the classroom.
No, there was still corporal punishment. And there was a lot of fear in the way religion was taught. Hmm. If you do this, you will go to hell.
Hmm.
That was kind of an overriding theme, if you will. Hmm.
Yeah. And so when we're going to take a, you know, like a 30-second break. And
yeah.
When we come back from a 30-second break, we got a nice revelation about my own mother and her own walk and her own call. That is an interesting take on all of this altogether. And then finishing up talking about just the call in general. How do we all find our own call, whether it is being a handyman or being a lawyer or whatever it is, of listening to where God is calling you. And so I'm curious to know what you all think. So please... your insights on what does it mean to be called and how do you discover that call? Or do you feel like you've never had a call? You just got up and you do what you do because that's what you do. So it's 772-220-9788. We'll take a quick break and be right back and hear the special take on my mother's own personal call. Right. We said 30 seconds. You get 30 seconds. So we're back here for the last segment of the show. And again, so mom, you know, we all have our calls. And in my family, a lot of people, we've explored multiple calls. And a lot of it involved the arts. You know, my sister was a violinist for a long time. And then she was about to go off to France to go study the violin. And the last second she said, I'm going to law school. Mm-hmm. My father was a jazz pianist and did a lot of other stuff as well, and then said, I'm going to law school. And my mother, who was, you know, you had a lot of talents going on when you were at McGill, and whether it was in literature or English and drama itself of being an actress, mm-hmm. and then you end up going to law school. So, but before then.
So I think we share a commonality. So I grew up in Toronto. And I had a brother that went to McGill University, which is a great university.
Yes.
Though from an Ontario perspective and a Quebec perspective, it is like the difference between England and France. We are separated by this imaginary border that separates the two provinces, and we couldn't be any more different. But great to know that we have one in our studio that went to. I guess we in Canada aptly call it the Ivy League of Canada.
Yes.
The Harvard of Canada.
Absolutely.
Yes, with honors.
Yeah.
But
yes.
And William Shatner.
Absolutely. we won't go with the Jim Carrey or the other Howie Mandel of Canada. But I just wanted to pick up on something you had mentioned earlier about, you know, that whole notion of punishment,
yeah.
right? And I think you know, I'm not extremely well versed in Catholicism, although was taught Christianity by Karen Armstrong out of England. It was one of those things that. You know, if you do this, you will be rewarded. If you do not, you will be punished. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot in our traditions that speak to that. And I think as, you know, as rational people, as people who think and question and kind of discern meaning from it, is what value does that impress upon us? And I know as Reformed Jews, our liturgy is very much the same. I mean, we have our formal declaration that says, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, that hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, known through, you know, our prayers in and of itself. And there are three paragraphs to the Shema. But what the Reform movement did was they omitted the third paragraph. And it was no disrespect to our tradition or anything else, but when they compiled our prayer book, the early Reform movement, and certainly the Reform movement, had this understanding that it's not about if I perform something here and on this earth that I shall be rewarded, mm-hmm. and if I don't, God will punish me. And you know, from the Reform movement's perspective, it was. It's not about fear. It's not about eliciting that compulsion that makes us do things for the ability that we will be punished. So you know, in our prayer book, I mean, we have an appendix. The full Shema is there, but we took that out because we just felt that it presented the wrong message. That we shouldn't have to live our lives based on fear. We should live our lives based on those values that you know, we want to impress upon others and ourselves. And I just struck by, you know, when you had mentioned that whole notion of, you know, from a Catholic perspective of, you know, instilling obedience and fear, you know, is that warranted? And, you know, for some, I think that it is a structural path that, you know, fits in. But what happens when we don't fit into that nicely fitted mold that, you know, and just to hear your take on, especially the punishment perspective.
I think that's why you will find in the Episcopal Church a lot of ex-Catholics, because that is, it's a heavy load to carry, and at some point in one's life, I can't deal with this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in God. I want to have faith in my life, but this is just too much for me to handle. That and a number of other things going on in the Catholic Church, I think, forces people out.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I think
fear only goes so far.
Yeah, and it weighs on you. And I've had people come into my office who are just wrestling with that fear and that worry that I've done these things in my life, and I'm so scared about where I'm going to end up because of that, as opposed to focusing on the grace of God and the forgiveness and the healing of God and the changing of your life and the transformation that happens. So great, you know, Jesus says, I don't care who you are, where you've been, what you've done. as long as you love me, right? So but there's a change in your life. That there's a switch. You know, repentance means you are repenting, you are switching, you are changing. You said, I did this. This was not a walk that I wanted to take, or I took it for a while. It caused damage. It caused hurt. It caused hurt upon myself, no matter how horrible that is. But I fall down on my knees. I prostrate myself before you, God, and I say, please forgive me. Maybe I have to make amends with all the people I've hurt. But then I'm changing direction. I'm going in a new direction.
So for you, that change that occurred, can you define it in a specific time and place that said that light bulb switched on and said, that's for me. The priesthood is for me. How and when did that change occur internally with you?
For the priesthood. Well, I think that thank God that the Episcopal Church, if you walk up and you have a thought and say, I want to be a priest, usually they kind of just laugh at you and say, great, stick around for about 5 years and see where that goes. You know, so I've, you know, as my mom would say, I mean, at 10 years old, I wrote this letter to my grandma. I didn't know what it mean. It was always there. I was always talking to priests about it. But the first thing they always ask is, what's your primary love, or what do you love doing? And then when they would talk to me, they'd be like, you love acting. That's what you do. You love it. It brings you so much joy. There's nothing that's better than you being on a sitcom or whatever. And then the church is great, but it sounds like it's secondary. So there was a point throughout this conversation where finally a priest, Carol Anderson, who's one of the first female priests ordained in the Episcopal Church, said, okay, now I'm hearing something different. And you're 50-50, which is good. I don't want you 100%, because if you're 100%, I get really scared when people walk in my office. They're 100% and want to become a priest. I want you 50-50. They give you a discernment committee. You get 14 months to explore it with them. Then you got to go in front of the bishop. He's going to grill you. Then you got to go off to this weekend committee where you have deacons and lay people and priests grilling you again. You got to go to a psych. He does about 3 weeks of stuff. So there's all this time for you to be groomed and to really pray on this, to know, is this really the call? Is it just something that's romantic? Is it just something that sounds exciting? Are you running away from something else, which we know has caused a lot of damage in some churches, where you have pastors and priests who ran away from something, a demon that they're dealing with or wrestling with or a previous life, and they just want to make sure that you're good to go. So in the midst of all of that, there was a time where I had still working as an actor, and then I had this big audition that came up, but then I had this paper I had to write for the seminary I was going to in L.A., Fuller Seminary, and I remember thinking, gosh darn it, I can't prepare for this audition. It was a great audition. It was for this main role, I think, on some Disney show. And then I was like, I got to write this paper. And that's when it clicked to me, being like, there's something going on here. I want to go all in on this. And I'm willing to try that. And I want to go full-time seminary. And I just want to try this and go for it. And then,
seminary is still part of that discernment, and being at seminary being like, oh my gosh, I love this. So it was a slow flower that bloomed. And I think my mom would say that there is some traps there, that if you come straight out as a young man mm-hmm. and go straight into seminary with a lot of formation through a previous vocation, as we know, it can get this, it might not be the healthiest thing, not for everyone, but for some people mm-hmm. it can get unhealthy because you're still being formed.
Indeed, yeah. And that's the way it was for me
as well. Because the revelation from my mother was, when she was very young, she entered
the convent for a year.
Yeah, she's in the convent for a year, right? So you're still forming who you are.
I was 18.
Wow. Yeah, 18. And then what made you tap out?
You take three vows: poverty, chastity, and obedience. And poverty and chastity didn't bother me too much, but obedience was pretty hard. Wow. But however, you know, I think that an 18-year-old has no business going into religious life. The seminary, the priesthood, or to become a nun. I think you are immature, and you have an immature relationship with God. And I think some of it is seeking a safe haven, when what you do is you need to be out in the world first, and then your call happens. Sorry.
Yeah, so takes the slower you go, the faster you get there for whatever the call is that you're seeking, to really discern it and look at it, especially from a religious call, because there's so much maturity that goes into it, from people skills, understanding your own sexuality, as we can see the damage that it caused within the church. And you got these young people going in who might not understand everything that's going on inside, throw them in a group with a bunch of other men, and you know, it's just that. And again, this is a broad stroke, you know, this is not for everyone. Some people are ready to go and you go, but in general, I think for our calls in life, to really take the time to discern, to pray, and not, you don't, there's no rush, you know.
Well, it's a lifelong pursuit, right? I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're in it for, is to learn, to grow, and to inspire. But it is a lifelong pursuit.
Mom, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
God bless you all. We'll see you next week.